Assassins is a 1990 musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and a book by John Wideman. It's a non-linear series of vignettes about the assassins and attempted assassins of various U.S. presidents throughout history. They exist outside of time as they interact with each other and play out their own motivations in their respective assassinations. Different productions of Assassins have been received very differently, and it's been described as the most controversial musical ever, so there's a lot to talk about today. Luckily, my guest is Margaret Hall, a musical theater historian and teacher who recently said she might have to write a book about Assassins just to save her own sanity from dissecting it every night. So I hope you enjoy our conversation about Assassins. Hi, Margaret. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Quinn?
I am so excited. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about Assassins, possibly the gnarliest of the musicals in the Stephen Sondheim canon.
I love the word gnarliest. We are going to get into it today, but I want to start by asking you, what do you love about Assassins and how did you first hear this show?
Well, I'll go with how did I first hear that show, because the answer to what I love about it is everything. I first heard about Assassins when I was maybe 13. My family had just gotten its first dial-up computer. It was one of those like brick computers that if you like threw it through a window, it could kill somebody. And I had just discovered the magic of being able to download music. In my house before that, it had all been CDs and vinyls and cassettes and things along those lines. My parents weren't technophobes, but although I was born in 1997, I was raised as though I was born in 1977. And I was going through this like magical world where everything was in this box. And I knew that I loved musical theater because I was raised on theater. My dad's babysitting method was basically putting on the DVDs of South Pacific and The King and I and just sitting me in front of the TV. And so I looked up musical theater on this thing just to see what came up, and it listed everything alphabetically. And so, well, alphabetically, but it didn't have the number shows at the top. It had the number shows at the bottom. And so I just started downloading every album in A, because if you remember how desktop computers worked, it takes about a day and a half to download a single album. So I decided to set everything up to download all of the albums that it had that started with A in the musical theater category, and it would download that overnight, and then I'd come home after school the next day, and they'd be all ready for me. And for some reason, the first one that I opened was Assassins, and it was the 2004 recording. Are you familiar with what that logo looked like with the finger gun?
Oh, I sure am.
It's extraordinarily 2004. It's very, I just got word clip art for the first time, but I love it.
Graphic design is my passion.
Oh, truly, truly. Whoever you are, thank you. And I opened that one because I'm like an edgy young teenager. He's doing a finger gun. It's called Assassins. Oh gosh, what is this? And the first thing that started playing was a banjo.
Johnny Booth was a handsome devil, got up in his rings and fancy silks. Had him a temper but kept it level, everybody called him Wilkes.
For your listeners who don't know, I am from rural Ohio originally, and that was an oddly like home sound that I was not expecting from something called Assassins. And so I listened to the whole thing in one day, and I fell head over heels in love, and then I forgot about it. Because I started just going through all the A albums and I wanted to listen to everything. And so I didn't really have time to dwell. And then I rediscovered Assassins when I was in high school. And it's like a bomb went off in my brain, honestly. I am very affectionate toward the 2004 production. I think it's as close to a perfect Sondheim production as you will ever find. It was fantastic. And I really, really attached myself to it. I saw regional productions at colleges in the area. If you know what Oakland University is, it's up in Michigan. Saw production there that was lovely. And I really just dove in deep on it. And I've been excavating it for the last 5, 6, maybe even 7 years at this point.
I love the idea of you like physically digging out things about Assassins.
Honestly, with the time that I spent at the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts, not entirely wrong. Lots of card catalog time.
That's beautiful. Well, it's sort of, for anyone who isn't familiar with the history of the productions of this show, they're kind of, there's been a bunch of different productions, but there are two like very major ones where we start with the original off-Broadway production of 1990, which doesn't do that well. It got pretty negative reviews.
Its reviews were very mixed. People didn't really know what to do with it. In 1990, we're talking about an America where we're just sort of heading into the Gulf War with George Bush Sr. We're tiptoeing around a lot of various crises that had been set in motion during the Reagan era. And also, people were kind of looking to push Sondheim off his pedestal in an interesting way. He had sort of been the critic's darling for so long. It's one of those things where if you do something good, you're expected to do even better than that on the next one. And Sondheim had done that so consistently, topping himself year after year after year after year. The two shows immediately before Assassins were Sunday in the Park with George, which won the Pulitzer Prize for drama, and Into the Woods, which was like probably the most family-friendly of his shows, if any of them are family-friendly. And so Assassins was sort of neither of those, and people didn't really know what to deal with it. People talked about politics, obviously, but people weren't really reckoning with things in the same way we are today, or the way they were in 2004 when it finally came to Broadway.
Mm-hmm. It's been described, I've seen this tagline used in multiple places, as the most controversial musical ever.
Very possible.
I thought about it and I was like, that really might be true, especially considering like how differently it's been received in different eras. Because a really interesting piece of its history is that it was supposed to be revived in 2001, mm-hmm. and then 9/11 happened, and they said, it's not the time.
They were in the middle of auditions. They had almost everyone cast. I believe they had auditions for The Proprietor on September 11th.
Wow.
And then obviously the events of 9/11 happened and they pretty much knew immediately, well, we aren't going to be doing Assassins this season anymore.
Yeah. So it gets brought back for the actual revival that ends up being the first Broadway production in 2004, which is still very much a world that is extremely fresh off of 9/11 for all intents and purposes.
Oh, very. But by 2004, things had kind of, there was kind of a corner turn because there was such a spike in nationalism after 9/11. I don't know if you remember sort of where the country was at, or if you're even old enough to remember where the country was at that point. But there was a massive spike. And by 2004, people were able to sort of step back, not fully, but a bit more, and sort of look at what had happened. It's almost interesting. Bush did not die during 9/11, but 9/11 was a flashpoint memory for the American people in the same way that JFK's assassination was. And so I think Assassins felt almost like too fresh, too soon to do in 2001, because it's talking about sort of a similar thing that, like, if Come From Away had happened in 2001, I don't think it would have been received the same way it was when it came about.
Well, it also was about 9/11, so, I mean, it would have been historically difficult. But
yeah, no, but I'm saying, like, Assassins isn't distinctly about 9/11, but it's close enough that it was gonna hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I think like one of the plot lines in Assassins is the historical tale of someone who tried to hijack a plane.
Oh, yeah. Samuel Beck.
Yeah. And I think they probably would have put off the production regardless of that. But like having that specifically in the show is just like, that's a hard line that we just can't put this on stage right now.
Yeah. You don't really want to have a moment where a man in a Santa suit calls Richard Nixon and said he's going to fly a plane into the White House.
Yeah.
So not really a moment for that part of the national consciousness.
No, not so much. Versus like, as you're talking about in 2004, like it's still definitely like this huge flashpoint that everyone's going to be thinking about in relation to the show. But now people were in general, the public was in a place where they could think about it in relation to the show without it being reactionary against the show.
They didn't have to walk through the literal rubble to get to the theater.
Yeah, that too. It's just a little bit too visceral in literal New York City.
Yeah, like it would have been a very big ask of an audience, because Assassins as it is, it asks a lot for an audience member's attention, empathy, and sort of ability to connect with people they've previously been told to cast off as ideological boogeymen. People weren't really looking to like dig deep and look at the complexities after 9/11. They were looking for comfort. And that's why Mamma Mia and the producers had like the best seasons of all time.
And Mamma Mia is an American classic.
Mamma Mia, national treasure.
A national treasure of both America and Sweden.
How do you make a Nicolas Cage national treasure movie about Mamma Mia?
This is it. This is wow. This is why they pay you the big bucks, I assume. This is an off-topic thing, but I have to mention this at some point this episode, mm-hmm. is that Assassin's Creed has really ruined the SEO of this musical, and it was really hard to research
impossible.
It.
It kills me that, like, if you go on, like, Spotify and you search Assassins, the first thing that comes up is the soundtrack to the video game.
There's a lot I want to talk to you going back to all these topics about interpretation of the show in various sort of ages and contexts, but I think we should come back to that at the end and first get into what actually happens in this show.
Oh, yeah.
I think that Assassins might have the highest ratio of, like, amount of time it takes to explain the concept of a show versus amount of time it takes to like explain the depths of a show.
It probably takes longer than the opening number.
Yeah, it's like really easy to tell you what it's about, but it is not easy to like really explain what it's about.
You have to like understand 200 years of national history.
Yeah, and if you are me and you don't, then you have to cross-reference a lot of things.
Get very familiar with pronunciation guides.
I have some phonetic pronunciations written out in my notes because I was like, uh-oh.
I know, it takes a second.
Yeah.
It would be a very special person who, if the first time they open Assassins and they look at, like, just looking at, like, the names and you immediately know how to pronounce Leon Czolgosz, Charles J. Gâteau, Giuseppe Zangada, like, last names alone will trip you up. And then you've got, like, Gâteau's vocabulary, which is intentionally dense and confusing and designed to make you not understand a word the man is saying.
Yeah, and I didn't share this earlier, but I have been a fan of various Sondheim shows for like a really long time, but I only listened to Assassins in full for the first time about 6 months ago.
Oh, wow.
And it had been on my list forever, and I just like never gotten around to getting into it. And I am so fascinated by it now, and that's why I'm like so excited to talk to you about it today and really get into it. But I don't have like a long history with it, which is why like I have all these notes of like connecting assassin to president and like just keeping the name straight, because I mean, this is one of the big points of the show. Like, it's so funny how easy it is to remember, like, Booth and Oswald versus, like, mm-hmm. all of the other ones, like, float around in my head and I have to write down to make sure I've gotten them straight, just because it's not, like, ingrained history in my brain the way those two are, like, such huge points of American history that everyone in the U.S. knows.
Yeah, major flashpoint memories. But, I mean, if Assassins didn't exist, would you have any idea who Giuseppe Zangada was?
No, I never would.
Like, who was the man who shot at FDR? And even then, he technically doesn't even have his own song. He's got How I Saved Roosevelt with the other people singing. He's just like in the electric chair behind them, like, hello, I'm here.
What a sad turnout for him.
Oh. One of the things that really just I marvel at with Assassins, John Wideman, who is the book writer, truly turned out a Pulitzer-worthy libretto for this show. It is insanely good. It's also hysterical to me that at the time he was writing Assassins, he was also a writer for Sesame Street. And I think that is utterly hysterical.
I didn't know that. And that makes me think that he was like really working through something on his off time with this.
Oh, I love him so much. He's one of those people, like Sondheim obviously has a lot to do with the success of Assassins. John Wideman's work, it's so delicious. And I think so much of that shows up in how the lesser known assassins are handled. Like, this is kind of popping to the end of the show before we start at the beginning of the show. But when you're with Oswald and you're in the bookshop, there is that scene where he's really sort of setting up who Oswald is. Oswald doesn't get his own song. But the Ballad of Booth is where you really get to know Booth. But the scenes with like Sarah Jane Moore and Leon Czolgosz and Squeaky Lynette Fromm, that's how you get to know them, is you're getting them through the scenes, not really through the songs. Sarah Jane Moore doesn't have her own song. She sings a little bit in the Gung song, and she sings in sort of the major group songs, like Everybody's Got the Right, but there's not the ballad of Moore like there is for some of the others. But you get to know her just as vividly as you get to know the others because he understands people so well. And I think that's what makes the show work really well, is you're taking people that Assassins is the type of show that people sort of raise their hands at when they first hear about it. And they go, oh, how can you make a musical about that? You're making a musical about something. No, of course not. No. And he sort of throws that out the window and says, no, they're people. And musical theater is about people. I don't agree with what they're doing. And I, listener, if you are listening right now and you agree with what the Assassins did, please take a moment to evaluate that and possibly contact a therapist or a trusted friend, something along those lines. But in general, I think we can confidently say that most people are not there agreeing with what the Assassins have done. Violence ain't the answer, kids. However, he does a really good job of getting you to empathize with them. He makes them real people and not caricatures.
That's what makes this show so challenging, is because it doesn't condone what they do, but it also doesn't condemn it either. It just explains what they're doing.
No, it's presenting it as like this is what it was and this is why it happened. It's almost like a cautionary tale more than it is a condemnation.
Yeah, it's not saying like, oh, how these people did such tragedies in American history. It's like, this just is American history.
Yeah, this is what it is.
Yeah, this is what led each of these people to this point. And if you, when you see it like this, when you see them as people, like, no, we don't agree with what they did. And perhaps you would have, if you person would draw different conclusions when faced with the same information, but you can see why this happened. And you can't just write them off as like, oh, these people were quote unquote crazy, or like these people were just bad seeds, or like whatever sort of easy narrative is brushed on to these kinds of people.
People like to act like they're somehow different than us. Like, this is something that so I talk a lot about assassins on my Twitter account. And something that gets brought up every once in a while is that a lot of people, when they're sort of talking about the assassins, just not outside of the musical, they're talking about the people that are the assassins. They sort of talk about like they're broken. There's something wrong with them. And the question that always gets raised is, well, if you had gone through the very same experiences they had, what would your answer have been? And can you confidently say that you wouldn't have come to the same conclusion that they did? It's almost this like moral high ground that people get of, well, I would handle things better. Me with my unknowing, constant knowledge of everything that could ever happen, I would never come to such a conclusion. But I feel like that's incorrect a lot of the time. You don't know what you would do until you're in the situation. You can theorize it, but how many times have you planned out a conversation with someone, like an important like dialogue you need to have, and you get in the moment and that flies out your head immediately? And I think people sort of get comfort from separating themselves from people like this and saying, well, I would never, and therefore I exist on this different plane than them, and it's us versus them, and they are somehow lesser. But they're not. They're also human beings. And I feel like Assassins forces you to reckon with the fact that they're human beings. You can't, it doesn't care how badly directed a production of Assassins is, the writing ensures that on some level you will empathize. You could see a kids bop production of Assassins, which good God, I hope never happens, but you could see a kids bop production of Assassins and it would still reach you in some way. It wouldn't necessarily be as impactful as Joe Mantello's fantastic direction in 2004, but you would still get something from it on the strength of the writing alone.
That sounds like a challenge to make a production of Assassins that's bad enough to ruin the text.
Oh, if someone does it, tell me, I will fly out. I will buy my own ticket. I will be at every single performance. I need to unpack that if you somehow figure that out.
A really interesting part of the show as well is that you don't just have the characters of the assassins. You also have these two primary characters of the proprietor and the balladeer who kind of take on these conceptual roles and kind of pushing the motivations and the storytelling aspects of the show in different directions.
I like to think of the proprietor as like the little devil on your shoulder. Hmm. Like the whole idea of like you've got the little angel and you've got the little devil. And sort of how everyone carries their burden. Everyone has their little angel and devil. And especially in the 2004 production, I think this is really clear. Unfortunately, you can't go to Broadway and see this right now, but if you had, he spends a lot of time looking over the shoulders of the assassins and sort of speaking to them from behind, which I think is a physicalization and brilliant choice by Joe Mantello and Mark Kudish of he's that little voice in the back of your head. He's like that intrusive thought of what if I just do this or what if this could fix it? And we all have those. We all have those thoughts that just pop into your head. You don't necessarily believe them, but it's just something that happens. It's like if you're driving your car and a little voice in the back of your head just says, what if you just swerved off the road right now? You're not going to do it, but intrusive thoughts are a thing. And I think he really represents this interesting mesh of that little devil on your shoulder and sort of this expectation that gets leveled at people through the American dream, that somehow by being American, you're owed something and that you sort of are owed a success. And I think that's what he's really getting at in Everybody's Got the Right. And then that little idea that you're owed something or you somehow are meant for greatness, that kind of idea, this individual versus the community concept. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what the proprietor represents. And he's just staying on their shoulder for the whole night, just waiting for that weak moment when they'll listen and when he can kind of get into their ear. On the other hand, you've got the balladeer who is almost, and it's changed a lot over the years through the productions. The balladeer as played by Patrick Cassidy in 1990 is very different than the balladeer as played by Neil Patrick Harris in 2004. A, because they combined the role of the balladeer and Lee Harvey Oswald in 2004, but also because, oddly enough, the understanding of the history changed. Because the balladeer is kind of supposed to represent general American consciousness, at least in my mind. He's sort of the folk singer, the bard who's telling the stories. He sings the Ballad of Booth, the Ballad of Czolgosz, the Ballad of Gateau. He's introducing you into this world. He's sort of like the audience's cipher. And the audience is irreparably changed by the events of 9/11. And so the balladeer becomes a very different figure when instead of talking about just sort of like ancient history, quote unquote, if we can call 200 years ancient history.
Well, by American standards.
Oh, gosh, yeah. But instead of reflecting back, he feels much more active in 2004. And part of that is pairing him with Lee Harvey Oswald. But there's something interesting that happens with that character of, I feel like the balladeer has probably changed the most out of everyone in that show during its existence, really.
You also alluded to something earlier that is a major change in the 2004 production and is pretty commonly incorporated into production since then, which is the balladeer turns into Lee Harvey Oswald at the end, and the same actor plays both roles. I didn't quite realize that's what's happening the first time I listened to it because when you're just listening to it, I'm not always seeing exactly what's happening. And then when I looked into it later and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And the thing that's insane, it's not actually written into the licensing script. They've never made it like the official version of like you play these together. But the 2004 was so impactful that everyone just does it. You can technically go back to the old way, but I don't think I've seen a single live production that's not combined them since.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of anything similar to that where something hasn't been put into an official script, but everyone does it anyway, just because it's like been kind of universally decided that's correct.
Yeah. And the thing that gets me is they didn't think it was going to work originally. So basically why I think it works. I'll say this. I think it works really well because you empathize and identify on some level with the balladeer throughout the whole show. He's kind of like your guy. He's your in. He's your self-insert character, quote unquote. And for him to suddenly turn on you and become Lee Harvey Oswald, who, especially in 1990, everyone in that audience knows where they were when JFK was killed. That's another flashpoint memory, like we talked about with 9/11. There's this moment, because in talking about the empathy, you go into the show, you know Booth is going to be a bad person. I'm assuming if you're walking into Assassins, you carry that cultural knowledge that, like, yes, John Wilkes Booth killed Abraham Lincoln. Having someone that you've grown to sort of trust and identify with and is sort of like on your side, quote unquote, throughout the show with the Balladeer, to have him turn into Lee Harvey Oswald, who is arguably even more hated than John Wilkes Booth, or at least on the same level. It's like a betrayal of extremes. It's really quite intense. And it's very visceral, especially in 2004, because Joe Mantello made the decision to project the Zapruder film on Neil Patrick Harris's chest.
Wow.
And in doing that, think about, like, so imagine you're like 8 years old when JFK dies, and you watch all the news reports on one of those little televisions. That's about the size of the projection of what's on Neil's chest. And it's like pulling you right back into that moment. It's not big. It's not bombastic. It's tight. It's small. It's claustrophobic, even. And then right out of that moment, you go into something just broke.
I was out in the yard, taking down the bed sheets, when my neighbor yelled across,
"The president's been shot."
I remember where I was, just exactly where I was, in the yard out back.
"The president's been shot."
Which I personally find to be a fantastic addition. Something Just Broke was added for the London production. It's not in the original 1990 production of Assassins. And then it's in 2004, and it's just, it's this lament of grief. And just sort of this outpouring of, this is what happens when an assassination occurs. You've seen their side of what they want to happen and how they feel about it. This is what's happening with the American people. And that sort of grief and taking that audience through that collective flashpoint memory of when JFK was killed. Because it's sort of like, for me and my generation, like, people know where they were when they found out Michael Jackson was dead. That sort of thing. I don't know a single person in my parents' generation who can't tell you in vivid detail where they were when JFK died. And John Weidman and Stephen Sondheim, the dream team, they managed to take you through both the startle of that grief and then the comfort through it in this gorgeous 15-minute sequence of the show, where they're taking you from the lead up to Lee Harvey Oswald killing JFK, the assassination, into Something Just Broke. And it's like, that in itself is a play. Those 15 minutes are in and of itself one of the best short plays ever written. And then you get everything else around it. It is just a feast.
Because this whole section is also coming right after another national anthem is what goes into this. And this is one of the most interesting parts of the show for me. Because it's a turning point with the Balladeer and sort of the Assassins pushing aside the Balladeer fully for the first time and taking over the show, like not letting sort of the American folk tradition voice impede on what their narrative they're telling.
They're telling their own stories. He's not telling it for them. It's their own words now.
"Where's my prize?
And you forgot.
What's my price?
How quick it heals.
Promise
the that it's a place where you can make the lies come true.
Spread the word.
If you try.
Gotta spread the word.
That's all you have to do.
Right, all you have to do.
Yeah, and then this going into, like, convincing, like, in this narrative, like, the ghosts of the Assassins past and present are, or past and future, are convincing Oswald to assassinate JFK. And I find this so fascinating because we've talked about the way that this show has different resonance and, like, relationship to these assassinations or 9/11, but this song, more than anything, reminds me of the idea of mass shooters and school shooters, because the narrative that they're telling the character of Oswald is, you will be remembered for this, you will have an impact for this. It's not a good impact, but people will know your name and you will be able to impact strangers across the world who you've never met. And isn't that an enticing idea? And that's a narrative I think that is commonly ascribed to be a contribution to mass shootings.
It's in your grasp, Lee. All you have to do is move your little finger. You can close the New York Stock Exchange.
Shut down the schools in Indonesia.
In Florence, Italy, a woman will leap from the Duomo clutching a picture of your victim and cursing your name.
Yes, but I also think that that idea, oddly enough, it's kind of baked into the American dream. And that's why I think it's called Another National Anthem. Mm-hmm. I wrote a whole thing for Theater Mania. So the original production that closed from Playwrights Horizons, it closed on February 16th, 1991. So it's 30 years this month. And so I wrote a whole thing for Theater Mania talking about how Assassins really speaks to the American dream in a way people don't want to talk about. There's something about the idea of exceptionalism, and that the most important thing you can do with your life is leave a legacy. This obsession with being remembered and having done some great act that puts you into the annals of history, it can get warped very easily if people aren't careful. And I think, like, there's been a lot of talk, especially in the last couple of years, with school shooters and releasing their names and their photographs to the press, and sort of the idea of this being a fame-seeking activity. It certainly has been for some of the assassins. Gateau killed because, A, he wanted to be ambassador to France, and B, because he wanted to sell more copies of his book. And you know what? He did. People are still buying copies of his book, not because it's a great book, but because he killed the president. And that is something that people don't really like to reckon with. But if you look at sort of the media that Americans eat up like candy, violence is involved in the top 10 of almost every art form. There's a reason that, like, cop procedural shows have been running for how long? There's something about sort of the graphic violence. It's publicly abhorred and spoken against, but personally absorbing. I mean, look at the true crime movement. We're on a podcast right now. True crime podcasts are everywhere. And people wouldn't, they would not be made at the level that they are being made if they were not being consumed and enjoyed. And if, yes, they are enjoyed across the world, but there is something peculiarly American about this sort of fascination with this type of crime. And I am not the one to unpack it all, but it is very, you're touching on something that is very, very real.
I was actually going to bring up true crime to you because this musical isn't like true crime in the way that it is traditionally created and consumed right now. But we are in like this, it's one of the most popular and sort of buzzy genres out there at the moment in terms of like podcasts. And there's like 100 Netflix documentaries now. And Assassins is coming up to another big revival. Now, when will it happen? Unknown, because it was supposed to happen last year. But hypothetically, there is an Assassins revival in New York coming up in the relative near future. And I'm wondering what you think, like, how is that going to be interpreted, both in terms of like a culture that is very primed towards true crime and thinking about true crime at the moment, but also in the wakes of like very recent events like the Capitol attacks?
In a very odd way, I think Assassins could be the thing that helps bring some people together.
Hmm.
Which is definitely not the effect it had in 1990, but with where we are in 2021, John Doyle, who runs Classic Stage Company and who was going to be doing this revival of Assassins off-Broadway, he's talked about how it's going to be very different. He was preparing a production of Assassins with one president, and now we're going to have it with a different one. And whoever's president at the time of a production of Assassins changes things drastically. Mm-hmm. We, unfortunately, live in a country that operates mainly on a two-party system. And the us versus them of a two-party system is sort of baked into the system. And Assassins gets received very differently depending on who is in that Oval Office. But in the oddest way, especially after the insurrection on January 6th, I think Assassins has the ability to start a conversation, which I think is the first step in figuring out what we're going to do after everything that has happened, because Assassins opens up empathy. And it's everything we talked about these are the people that are sort of the othered. These are the people that we cast off that we don't want to talk about. And I think with QAnon, I think most of the people that have been taken in by that, a lot of the people who've been very taken in by sort of the very far right and also far left fringes are people who feel like they don't belong. And is there anyone who feels like they don't belong more than a presidential assassin? So many of them in the piece talk directly about feeling like they aren't supposed to be there. And they feel like they are trapped. I mean, there's a whole line in the Ballad of Czolgosz, some men have everything and some have none. That's by design. And I think we're really sort of feeling the effects of that right now. And if people, and of course this all requires people to go into assassins to let it affect them. If you go into any show and you're like, well, I know how I'm going to feel about this. I'm going in and I've decided I'm going to be angry about it. You're going to be angry about it because you decided to be a toddler and dug your feet into the sand. But if people go in and they really let themselves experience the piece and they meet the piece on its own terms, maybe that's what a person needs to finally go, okay, I'm going to reach out to that aunt who's kind of gone off the deep end with QAnon stuff. I'm going to try and connect with her. I'm going to empathize with her. I'm going to reach out and I'm going to try and bring her back. Because what's welcoming people into these extreme fringe groups is they feel welcomed by them in a way they don't feel welcomed by the mainstream. And the thing with assassins, these people outside of one or two of them did not actually live at the same time. John Wilkes Booth did not live to see Lee Harvey Oswald kill JFK. But what assassins does is it allows them to exist in the same time and place to commiserate. And that they find this community with each other. They find this sense of belonging in this lineup of history. And I think if we could find a way to make it that the mainstream that we are in right now, and by mainstream, I don't mean the status quo, because I think it is very clear that the status quo has to change. By the mainstream, I mean humanity as a whole. The mainstream of people who don't go out and shoot people casually. That's what I'm meaning by mainstream here.
Good. Yeah.
If we can make that a place where people feel capable of connecting with each other, the less people we ostracize, the better, I think. I think with where we are as a divided country, we have to stop shutting each other out, at least in terms of empathy. We can abhor the actions of a person. We can say you have had a net negative effect on humanity, but they're still a human being. And I feel like we as a country have gotten to the point where we have dehumanized the other side. And I think when that happens, it's only going to get worse. And I think we have to remember the humanity in other people. And I think Assassins as a show speaks more to humanity than many shows that are lauded as being like the great stories of human life, because Assassins deals with the part we never want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
It's much, much easier to talk about something hard in this context because we've been having hard conversations all year. People are almost primed for the message of Assassins, I think, if they let themselves be primed. When you're walking into Assassins now, you're a very different person than you would have been a year ago. That's what I've been getting all of these things in my time hop. Of like a year ago, walking around New York, like nothing was going on, like everything was okay. Very different world. We're all different. And I think with any show, the audience is another character. And what you bring to it changes what the show is on some level. And so I'm very, very excited for this production, because I think it could do a lot of good if people allow it to.
I agree totally with your sort of analysis of like the message of the show and sort of what it teaches you about people and about empathy. You are more optimistic than I am about what people will actually take from it on a fundamental level.
True. I've been trying to look at silver linings this month, because it's gotten to the point where if I'm not looking at silver linings, I'm sinking. That's just where I'm at in my quarantine journey.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to have faith in humanity and other people.
Yeah, I say this not to take away your optimism. I'm going to try to join you. Well, I think that brings us to a great place to move into the lightning round.
Oh, boy.
So, Margaret, what is your favorite song in Assassins?
I adore all of the ballads, but lately I've been really digging the gun song.
Nice. So spicy pick.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite line?
Some men have everything and some have none. That's by design. But I also love the entire Emma Goldman speech. I think she's a really underappreciated aspect of the show.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Emma Goldman. Who is your favorite character?
Charles J. Guiteau, because he's the madman among the mad.
Mm-hmm. And if you could play a character, who would it be?
Sarah Jane Moore. I want to shoot at a thing at KFC. That looks like so much fun. That whole scene is just so, it's delicious. I am a performer, and if someone would like to gender bend the role of Charles J. Guiteau, please call me. But Sarah Jane Moore, oh, it's so good.
We'll put you down for both for the time being.
Okay.
Who would you recommend see this show if you had to recommend a specific person or kind of person?
Anyone who's ever sat through an AP US history course, but also pretty much anyone who's been fed the American history that is given to you by like the Common Core. As someone who's very into history as a historian, there's a lot more to it. And I think Assassins is a great way to dip your toe into getting out of the textbook.
Finally, if you could combine this show with another one, which one would you pick?
I'd probably do a daily double where I'd go and see Pacific Overtures with Assassins. Pacific Overtures is the Sondheim show that he also did with John Wideman. So it's the same team up. And it's also a show that's kind of about American exceptionalism, only from a different angle. The call is coming from inside the house in Assassins. And in Pacific Overtures, we are showing up at Japan's door and breaking it down.
There you go. Margaret, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation and for your very thoughtful analysis of Assassins. This has been so much fun.
Thank you. I've had a great time.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. Goodbye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find Margaret at margaret-hall.com, where you can find her musical theater history classes, her upcoming book, and her free musical theater history newsletter. Links to all of her projects are in the show notes. You can find those show notes at theincomparable.com/COTS. And you can find us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. See you next month.